Hello, my name is Marie Bilodeau, and you are listening to On the Edge. Today, we're pleased to welcome author Greg Keyes to discuss his short story anthology, The Hounds of Ash and Other Tales of Fool Wolf. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, it's great to be here.
Wonderful. So can you tell us a little bit about what was your inspiration for Tales of Fool Wolf, and how did you go about crafting your story?
Well, it's sort of I didn't really have to think about the Tales of Fool too much because I've been a fan of tricksters most of my life. And when I was a child, I lived on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona, where the coyote is the trickster, and Fool Wolf is really just another name for coyote. Working with Mississippi Choctaws, their trickster is the rabbit, but a lot of the stories are similar. So I just had a lot of these stories in my head, and then I had this setting, the world from the Waterborn and the Black God, and the characters of the Hmong, of which Fool Wolf is one, are pretty, very loosely, but definitely based on the Diné, the Navajo, to a certain extent, even to the fact that their language is similar. Mm. So I just had, I think in the foreword of the book, I talk about my friend Dave Gross just pointing to the map in the Waterborne and saying, I want to hear some stories about this place on the map. And so I thought that not only could I write about that place on the map, but I could create this sort of traveling character who could go every place on the map that's not covered in the Waterborne. And that was essentially, my inspiration. And, of course, I also grew up reading these stories like Conan the Barbarian, Elric the Meldabone, Cudgel the Clever, these kind of picaresque stories of, characters kind of wandering into and out of trouble. And I always wanted to write something like that as well. I really love those things. And, I think when you're a writer, you want to write the things that you like to read. And sometimes, and very particularly, you want to go back to some of the things you read in your childhood and write something along those lines.
That's true. So you don't mind then when you're compared to good old-fashioned sword and sorcery adventures, eh?
No, I like that comparison.
Good. Now, did you find it difficult writing in a world where other stories were already set? Did you find it difficult kind of keeping that balance?
Actually, I found it easier just because the world was already there. I was already comfortable in it. It was fun to kind of have, when there are points of contact, for instance, in one of the stories, there's a character who is the sister of one of the central characters, the Waterborn, Heji. But she never really appears in the Waterborn, and Heji certainly doesn't appear in any of the Fool stories. But I get, for instance, we get to see what happens to the city of Null after the events of the Waterborn and the Black God. And then we get to see big chunks of that world that I never found any way of working into the two novels. It was really a lot of fun because I really enjoyed that creating that world and writing that world, and just wanted to do more with it.
That's fun. So are you planning on going back to that world either with more Fool Wolf stories or just a different story altogether?
I might. I'm never sure what I'm going to do. one thing about the Fool Wolf stories, I guess at some point I thought that there wasn't that much interest in that world as such. I mean, the Waterborne and the Black God did okay, and I hear comments, and certainly fans of those books. But after the Fool Wolf stories were originally published in a magazine, and for years after that, people would ask me when they were going to appear in a book, and I had sort of forgotten them in a way. And then every time I'd meet a new fan who would ask if there was, any way that they might be collected, my general response was no, because it's not the kind of thing that people publish these days. If you think about it, if you look at the bookshelves, you just don't see a lot. I don't think Elric and Meldabone would be published now.
That's true.
The climb.
So how did it come to be then? How did the anthology come into being?
Well, I wanted to find a home for it, and Edge was willing to give it one. So, it's really as simple as that.
Wonderful. A bit of luck mixed in then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you tell us a bit about Fool Wolf's relationship with Chugachik?
Well, Chugachik is sort of a spirit. The way that magic, I guess, sort of works in this universe is that people form relationships with the spirit of the land, the sea, the sky, and all that. And sometimes those that are shamans actually have spirits that come to live inside of them and inhabit them. And generally these spirits are, you know, some are powerful, some are not, and that determines the power of the shaman. But Fool's father basically pressed him to accept the spirit, and neither of them really knew what they were getting into. Chigachik was kind of in disguise as something less nasty. So Chigachik can give Fool Wolf enormous amounts of power, but when he does, when it happens, Fool Wolf usually loses his consciousness for a while, and when he wakes up, he's usually done some really, really, really awful things, even by his standards. But there's also this kind of, you know, it's every time that he seems to be on the verge of maybe being able to get rid of Chigachik, he suddenly discovers that he needs her again. So, and there is a kind of a, even an almost vaguely sexual relationship between the two in the way that they kind of play off of each other. And at times, at least in my mind, it's difficult to figure out at times which one of them is actually doing the talking. You know, because there's a point where Fool Wolf and Chigachik kind of are the same.
Interesting. Now, with Fool Wolf, you did create a character, like you mentioned, it's a trickster character, and because of that, he becomes kind of an anti-hero. Did you find it difficult crafting him in such a way that he was still a likable character to your reader?
Not really. I didn't really find that very difficult at all. My friend commissioned this work, the original one, Dave Gross, feels that that's because I'm essentially writing about myself. But and I'm certainly not an extreme, but I guess I know what he means by that. No, I didn't, you know, because he still, in the end, depends on what your standard of the right thing is, but you know, in the end, he still has kind of a moral core, as much as he hates to have it. It's still there, and he still does, you know, return to doing, you know, basically what's right.
Yeah. Now, with Chigachik, you had mentioned something that was rather interesting, is they have this, like, tight relationship together. I mean, they're kind of stuck together for the moment. But at one point, and this is a bit of a spoiler alert, he does manage to get rid of her, but he takes her back. Now, is it ever your intention, and there were good reasons for that, which we'll let the readers find out, but is it ever your intention, or do you ever think that in future stories, Fool Wolf would be able to get rid of the goddess?
Well, I think it's always a possibility, and that's his ultimate goal. I mean, his ultimate goal, at least he believes it is, his ultimate goal is to get rid of her, you know, when it's not going to cause him worse troubles to get rid of her than to keep her. That's always kind of the problem. And that's part of the problem of having power, period. You know, that... You know, once you have it, trying to give it up always seems to create some sort of problem.
Mm.
So, but it's, you know, it's not impossible. It's certainly his goal. But, you know, whether that will actually happen or not, I can't say.
You'll find out when you read, when you write more of them. Are you planning on writing more of his adventures?
I'd like to. I mean, I really like this character and I like this world. So it's certainly, you know, and I sat down and thought about writing some more. The only problem being is that there's already been kind of an apocalyptic moment. And I have to think of something that is not only logical, you know, a logical place to go from there, that's better. You know, I don't want to write stories just for the sake of writing them. I want them to make sense with the rest of the body of the stories. Mm-hmm. And that's been sort of a challenge for me so far, even though I haven't really, you know, I've been busy with other projects, so I haven't completely applied myself to it. But it's something that I want to get around to someday.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we certainly hope you will. Now, did you want to tell us a little bit about what you're working on right now?
You know, I'm working with a licensed property right now, and I'm not sure it's been announced. So I don't know that I'm at liberty to say anything about it.
Well, that's fair. Well, we look forward to hearing what it is about when you are at liberty to do so. We don't want to get you in trouble here. Okay, now here's a very important question. If a first-time reader was about to sit down and crack open his or her brand-new copy of The Hounds of Ash, what would you say in your vast experience, and think carefully about this, would be the perfect drink to accompany the reading?
That's an interesting question. And I think there would have to be more than one.
Oh, do tell.
I think for the first chapter, for instance, what you want is some kind of dark German beer and some Becherovka.
Oh.
Which is a liquor from the Czech province.
Okay, I had to admit, I didn't know that one.
Becherovka, it's an herb, one of those herby liquors. They serve it in a place there called Ufleku, and for some reason when I drink it, it kind of takes me out into the mountains and them.
Oh.
You know, but I think on balance, like for the rest of the stories, you might want a Sazerac.
Oh. Sazerac.
Sazerac. Should I explain the Sazerac?
Please, please, go ahead.
Sazerac is one of those drinks that appears to be harmless and maybe even dainty, but in fact it's mostly whiskey. So it Sazerac is mostly either rye, whiskey, or bourbon with a splash of Pernod and a little Peychaud bitters, and that's it. A twist of lemon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly a big glass of bourbon. And it's shaken up like a martini, put in a martini glass.
Right, so then you would recommend to readers that should they follow these suggestions, they take their time sipping the drink, or they'll be knocked out by the time they get to the end of the book?
It depends, I guess, on their experience with drinks. But I would say start with the beer and the Becherovka and then have the Sazerac.
Very nice. Good suggestions. Thank you very much. If anyone was looking for information on you, where should they go on the internet?
Well, they can go to my website, which I believe is just www.gregkeys.com.
Wonderful.
Any search on my name, a Google search on my name will bring it up.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so very much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thanks for the interview.
Thanks, Greg. To pick up a copy of The Hounds of Ash, we welcome you to go to www.edgewebsite.com, or again, just pay a visit to your local bookstore. See you again next time on The Edge.